Hello, how's everyone doing today? This is Brad Rao at bradraomusic.com. Welcome, and I have a very exciting lecture for you here, relating philosophy and music together, which I think is a very interesting thing to do, and I think that people don't really understand the value of how much their philosophical view, which we always have some philosophical view, determines how we're going to play music, how we perceive music, how we write music, how we think about music, how we try to approach. The very goals that we set for ourselves are based on what we think is right. Philosophy, of course, has been explained as the answer to the three questions: what is good, what is true, and what is beautiful. I think that music, as a performer, we want to know what is good. We want to know what good music is. Of course, philosophy would normally talk about ethics in terms of good. What is true? We want to be able to think about things. If we're going to practice the scales to improve our speed, and we use a method that does not improve our speed, we are not facing the truth, and we need to realize that we have to change our method, for example. So what is true and what is beautiful? Aesthetics is usually the term referred to what is beautiful, which I think is a strange thing to belong in philosophy, but it's in there. Beauty in the eye of the beholder is eventually the philosophical premise that most people have realized. That out of the whether or not something is true, beautiful is more of a subjective thing. But we're not really here to get into that. But these ideas of what are good and what is true and what is beautiful within the musical context is very relevant for our approach to music, how we're going to practice, what we practice, what our goals are, and whether or not we're going to effectively reach our goals. Because if we're practicing in it, if we believe something is true when it is not, and we are basing our practicing off of that, we will not reach our goals. And I think that many people who aren't reaching their goals, and they're working very hard, and they're not reaching their goals, that actually happens a lot in music. People who don't really work that hard at all seem to reach all their goals. Have you ever noticed that in life? People who don't work that hard reach all their goals, and people who work really hard never really seem to get anywhere. Or if they do, it's not, you know, I think that a lot of this is because their philosophical view. And I think that taking a minute to look at philosophy, and we're going to specifically focus on the application to music. Plato and Aristotle, as far as I knew, weren't really musicians or serious musicians, if they played at all. They weren't talking about music when they were talking, but I think that we're going to look at their philosophies and how they apply to music, and we're going to take what I believe are, and what most people believe are, the two most important philosophers: Plato, which has been said that all philosophy is a footnote to Plato. Plato was a Socrates student who most people say is the founder of philosophy. Of course, there are philosophers who date back earlier than that, but it seems like the tradition really picked up around Socrates. And really, the only thing we know about Socrates, or most of what we know, is in the writings of Plato. And Plato's most important student, Aristotle, it is said about him that he knew everything that could be known at a time. He knew everything about math and philosophy and religion, and he knew everything about different types of plants, and all of the different studies of the human mind and brain. He knew everything and was even an innovator on many things. He was actually the first to prove that pi is an irrational number and that it does not repeat and that it will never repeat, which is actually, you know, in mathematics, a very big deal. But we're going to actually look at he was a philosopher too, and we're going to look at his view and mostly how it differs from Plato. So basically, to talk about philosophy and to really get a good idea of the value of philosophy, we're going to compare two different philosophies so that we can really get an idea of the fact that it's very funny that I just said that. If you, by the end of this lecture, hopefully that will be funny to you. The idea of the fact that different philosophers have different answers and that there is no set correct answer, and that if you study different philosophers, you realize that each of them seem to be true and have good arguments in their own right. And because there are so many different philosophers, it's really hard to say that one particular philosophy is true. So the reason that I'm presenting two philosophies is because if one of them seems correct, we have the opposite one to bounce its idea off of as a contrast, so that there's at least two present, and we're not really sure which one is the right one. And I'm at no point in time going to tell you if I think any of these are right or wrong, but I'm just going to present the ideas, and it's up to you to decide. Now, of course, Plato and Aristotle were not the only philosophers. Actually, there are quite a bit of other philosophers after that. Hopefully there would be, right? And so there are many, many more different answers to this question, and we're going to only look at two very basic ones. So I think that the more that you look into this, by looking at these two views, I hope that you're going to see the benefit that a musician can have and the premises that we rely on, the things that we don't even realize we do. And by studying more philosophers, maybe we can continue with that. But we're going to jump right in here. Plato's philosophy begins by saying that the world that we experience through our senses is not real, but is a copy. So he doesn't believe that when you're experiencing the way that you're experiencing it is not real. He believes that the real world is the world of the idea. He believes there's an ideal world where there exists, for example, the perfect idea of the tree. For Plato, the idea of the tree, there's a perfect tree that exists in this ideal world, and that each tree is a copy of this perfect ideal tree. He believes that there is a perfect human, and that every man is a copy of this ideal perfect human. He believes that about the every house is a copy of the perfect house, and that so for Plato, he believes that the real world is the idea, and that the idea comes first, and that the materialization of the idea is a secondary byproduct of the first of the idea, which we might call the first cause. That's not his word, that's just a way that I'm describing it. So that's an important thing for Plato. He calls himself an idealist, or what some of his students call him, an ideaist. I'm getting some of this from the Basic Teachings of the Great Philosophers by S.E. Frost Jr., which is a very, very basic outline of all the different philosophers. So I don't want to get too over anyone's head here. Now, Plato also believes that matter is imperfect, and that we have the idea of the perfect tree, and when we implant it onto matter, we have imperfections. No tree is the perfect tree, but it reminds us of the perfect tree. Each individual tree has imperfections due to matter and it actually existing in the material universe. The world that we see with our senses, which is not real. It is said to be a world of many mistakes, deformities, and evils. We experience it every day, but it is not real. Let's look at how that would apply to music, for example. That would mean that music, there is a, like if I play a piece of music by Bach, that there is a perfect version of that piece of music that exists. And my goal is to recreate that perfect version. And because I am made of matter, my version is imperfect. And if you've ever tried to play Bach, it's very, very hard to get it perfect. The goal is to strive for this perfection, to strive for this ideal world. And the idea of the piece exists. So the piece exists outside of anyone playing it. There is a place in this ideal universe where this Bach piece exists, and that I'm just simply recreating this ideal in the same way that there's the idea of a house, and I'm recreating the house. And every house has slight imperfections, but it's based off of the ideal house. And the closer I can come to the ideal, the better I would get. That the closer I come to the ideal is not necessarily Plato's argument, but this is how we're going to try to tie it into music. So this is how a lot of people actually will play music, is based off of this idealistic approach, where we believe that a piece of music can exist outside of any matter or any material form, in a perfect form. And I think that that's really important to understand, because if you approach music like that, you're going to get a certain result. You know, with it's music becomes more about, let's say, writing music would become not necessarily about creating something new, but finding a place in that idea. If you imagine, the ideal world would have all the possibilities, so all of Bach's music would be there, and all of everyone's music would be there. In fact, there'd be a lot of music that maybe wouldn't be so great that would also probably have to be there, I suppose. I don't know what Plato would say about that, but if we have the idea of a piece of music, there'd be all the combinations. So a composer is actually sorting through the idealistic possibilities of infinite music potential, and finding things, which means that he's not creating anything for himself. He is discovering something that has already, and he's discovering a musical idea that pre-exists in this ideal world, which Plato believes. He has the analogy of the cave, where he says there's a bunch of prisoners who are trapped in a cave, and all they can see are the shadows of the real world. And one of the prisoners escapes from the cave and sees the world for what it is, and realizes that the shadows are not the real world, but a reflection of the real world. And this person was considered insane, and I think was ended up executed in the story. This is pretty obviously a reference to Plato's teacher Socrates, which a similar thing happened, where Socrates was murdered for basically messing with people's heads. Socrates' most important saying is, "I know that I know nothing," and he also gave us the Socratic method. Where instead of telling someone something, you would ask a series of questions leading the student to the conclusion that you wanted to reach themselves. For example, instead of telling a student that C to G is a perfect fifth, you would say, well, how far would C and G be? Let's count. C would be 1, C, E, F, G, C, D, E, F, G, assuming I can count, and that would be 5 spaces apart. So that's why so that would have to be called a fifth. And having the student realizing that it's a fifth on their own, instead of you just simply telling them that's the Socratic method, which also applies to music and is a great teaching tool. I have found that for certain students it works very well, and for other students it totally doesn't work at all. And if you try to rely on it, you are going to not get anywhere very quickly. You're going to need to be a little bit more flexible. But if I can use the Socratic method with a student and they're able to really work with it, that's what I would strive for. Seems like more and more people are striving away from that, especially older people. Kids tend to be a little bit more accepting of that these days. I don't know why. Just a little trend that I've picked up, a little bit of anecdotal evidence, whatever that is worth for you. So let's talk about Aristotle and his approach to philosophy and how it differs from Plato and his idealistic view of the world. Again, we're looking at the basic teachings of the great philosophers, and I'm just going to try to paraphrase a little bit. So it starts off by talking about before Plato, there was the atomists, which believes that the world, somehow this crazy idea, the world was made of a bunch of little small atoms that were actually linked together, which ended up being true once we were able to shoot electrons through different pieces of material and find that there are positive centers where they couldn't go through, that were concentrated, and then lots of open space, which gave us the idea of the atom and led eventually to some quantum physics, which also has some interesting philosophical implications. Or don't, depending on depending on how you twist it. But Aristotle was trying to synthesize this atomic approach to Plato's idea. Plato's approach that there's the idea and that matter is not real, but the ideas are real, and matter is a reflection, an imperfect reflection of the ideals. So here we say, here I underline this, Aristotle was willing to admit that matter does exist. Whew! Thank God. That, luckily for that. So you exist, me and you both exist, your body exists, the world exists. What a relief. I was starting to get worried about Plato, that the world doesn't exist. But for Aristotle, the world exists, matter exists. But he also believes in something called forms. For Aristotle, he believes that there is a form that also exists. And he points out that the form is never separate from matter, and matter is never separate from the form. You only find the forms when you find matter, and you only find, when you find matter, you always find matter in some kind of form. So for him, he has forms and matter are not separate. Now that gives us a very, very different view of music, because for Aristotle, music is only when you play it. There is no idea of the song. You only hear the song when someone plays the song. So we're throwing out the perfect version of the song and realizing that the perfect version of the song is the song itself when you perform it. So that each performance of the song is the song, and that there is no ideal. So, you know, let's say that, getting in a little bit, if you messed up on a performance, then that's how that happened. That's the ideal way to do it, and that we're not trying to strive to reach this perfection, but realize that the way that we perform it, the limitations of our instrument, the limitations of our technique, the limitations of our understanding of music theory, the limitations of our understanding of expression and our ability to manipulate volume and articulation, is part of the musical experience, and that becomes part of the song itself, and that you can't separate that from the song. So that your goal, it really changes the very outlook on what you're trying to do. Instead of trying to recreate this perfect version of a piece of music, you're actually realizing that your version is the perfection, and that instead of, you know, and when you're looking for inspiration, you look to other people's versions. You realize that there is no version of music that exists without an interpretation. Each piece of music, the piece of music has to exist within a framework of interpretation. Your interpretation might be, I will play everything at the same volume and tone level the entire time, which is maybe poor taste or considered boring by some people, but that is still an interpretational approach. And that piece of music cannot exist outside of an interpretation. So that now, instead of trying to recreate this ideal thing, we look at how different people interpret it, and we realize that music is played by people. People are doing this, and their prejudices are getting in the way of it, to quote Robert Anton Wilson, referring to science is the product of people. Which is a little bit of humor there. That might have been over your head, I apologize. But so we realize that when I'm trying to recreate a piece of music by Bach or by Jimi Hendrix or whoever, now I have to look at different versions. There, you know, unfortunately, with a lot of classical musicians, we cannot look at the original source. I can't listen to Bach. With Jimi Hendrix, I can actually listen to his version, and then I can listen to other people's versions and decide which one I like. But because there's no original version, I can listen to different versions. I listen to John Williams, I listen to Julian Bream, I listen to Elliot Fisk. And each of them brings something new to the table, to the piece of music, because they are creating it. The form and the matter exist together. Their version of the recording exists, and their interpretation is also part of that, the song itself, in their version. And so now, you know, in the Platonic way, you might actually say that, oh, well, this version is closer to the ideal than the other. Of course, you would have to know what the ideal is. And there are different ways of trying to go about that. And if you've listened to my last lecture about Descartes, we find that, you know, you can hear what I think about that and how I don't think that there is a one particular certain version of the piece that is completely accurate, which is really more of an Aristotelian, of an Aristotelian approach to thinking about music. And my thinking about music will cause me to play music in different ways. So now that I, you know, and it causes me to practice in different ways and to approach music in different ways. If I accept Aristotle's view of music, now I'm not just going to practice in my room alone until I think I get it, but I'm going to listen to different versions and I'm going to look into the debate of different interpretations and try to take different people's interpretations and see what I like, instead of just having my own, when I play the piece outside of that, my own biases are getting in the way and I don't even realize it, and I play the piece the way that I think it should be played. You know, but really Aristotle's view separates the piece, you know, or doesn't, or links the piece to a certain performer, so that you can't have a piece without a performer. So we don't know anything about the music outside of someone performing it. And all of this other stuff is really speculation. For Aristotle, there's the performance of the music, and the form, which we could, Plato would call the idea, is actually based after that. So this is one of the most important distinguishing factors between Plato and Aristotle. Is that Plato believes that the idea comes first and matter, the realization in matter is secondary, and for Aristotle he believes that the matter and the form come first. The form is based off of the matter, so for him the matter comes first. I don't know if that's exactly what they're saying, but that's what I'm arguing to make it very interesting. I have this underlined here. I'm going to do a little reading here. Why, in the case of Plato, the sculptor is independent, free from his marble. In the case of Aristotle, he is dependent on the marble. His idea of the perfect statue is actually in the marble, and a form which the marble seeks to realize. So that's a little bit, you know, you can see kind of the difference where Aristotle is part of the marble itself, and not trying to separate himself from the music, but realizing that the music is a part of him. You know, this is sort of, you can, you know, it's kind of, when you get into philosophy, of course, these guys aren't talking about music, so I'm trying to take what they're saying and twist it into music as best as I can. And it's not really easy. I really have to pigeonhole the two arguments, and I think I am trying to do that too, because I want to try to get the controversy that exists between Plato and Aristotle and their disagreements. Even their philosophy on government was very, very different. There's the famous picture of Aristotle and Plato, one pointing up and one pointing down, which talks about this debate, but also talked about, you know, the political debate that is going on literally in America right now is the same debate that has existed between Plato and Aristotle for a very long time. And I think it's a debate that should be happening in music. People should be thinking about these things in music, I think. I think this is very interesting and very useful. This is not just theoretical. But this is your approach to interpretation is very much dependent on whether or not you accept Plato's view and believe that there is a perfect version of the piece of music that you're trying to recreate, and that every other version is an imperfect version, or the idea that the performance cannot exist outside of its form. No, the piece of music cannot exist unless someone plays the piece of music, which actually really makes sense. You have to play the piece of music for it to be a piece of music. It's not music until someone plays it. It doesn't become music. And the interpretation becomes part of that. And it's not to say that we're okay with messing up and that we're trying to reach reach the form of the music, but the form is a byproduct of the music itself, and that it's a byproduct of your instrument and your technique, and it's not the other way around, where the ideal form is slowly trying to project itself. So it's kind of an up, you know, Plato is going from the top down, and Aristotle is going from the bottom up. And again, that refers to that picture. So I think that I hope I made my point pretty clear, and I hope this was pretty interesting. I think there's a lot of implications, and to think about, you know, to realize that even within these two philosophical approaches, that there's a lot that can be learned about yourself and your approach to music and what you think music is and what you believe music should be, which is very, very fundamental. If you're trying to practice and you don't know what music should be, you haven't decided for yourself what direction you're going to go in. If you do Plato on Monday and Aristotle on Tuesday, are you really going in a direction? Are you ever going to get anywhere? You know, maybe the idea is to synthesize the two so that you have, you know, or I've also argued that to realization that both of these arguments are just two sides of the same coin and are one way of saying that yin creates yang, which creates yin, which creates yang, which creates yin, which creates yang. And it's really hard to know whether or not the chicken or the egg or the yin and the yang came first, and that each of these are really just arguing from one side going to the other. One of them is arguing yang creates yin, and the other one is arguing yin creates yang, and they're both right. That is another interpretation of philosophy, the synthesis of these two ideas, which really couldn't have happened unless you understood them in the first place. And looking at other philosophers, you get even a bigger picture of what music could be, or what music is to you, and what music should be, and why we play music in the first place. So I think I'm going to end here because I probably reiterated my point too much, but I really hope this was interesting, and I encourage people to think more about why they're doing what they're doing, what their goals really are, and how, and then forming a plan to reach their goals once they've established really what they think music is on a philosophical grounds. And the more that you know about philosophy, the more you'll be able to do this, and the more you'll be able to reach your goals. So anyway, here we go with more reiterating. So thanks for listening, and I hope to see you next time.